All right. Thank you, Ellie. Our meeting format calls for a guest speaker followed by open discussion. Our guest speaker will share for between 30 and 45 minutes before calling on people to share. During the open discussion portion of the meeting, we ask that you share to your heart's content. we want to make sure everybody gets a chance to participate tonight. I'm sure that'll be a good thing for us. It is now my great pleasure to introduce tonight's chair speaker. I got to see Christy come in to the Sunday night meeting barely a little over 2 years ago, and I'm so happy that she's celebrating 2 years sober. And so, Christy, take it away, my friend.
Thank you, Bill. I'm Christy, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm very grateful to be here tonight. Thank you for asking me to share. It's been a while since I had a chair. I'm kind of nervous. I'll just start at the beginning, I guess. I'm the youngest of five siblings, and I was a curious one, I guess. And I picked up trying to smoke at kindergarten. When I was in kindergarten, got caught, and then it progressed from there. In third, fourth grade, I was smoking cigarettes and then smoking pot and drinking. I couldn't tell you when my first drink was. But I know I was young like that. And we moved a lot, and then I was the last one at home, and we moved to quite a few states in Hawaii, and that's where I started smoking pot, was in Hawaii. Then we moved to Chicago my seventh grade year, and we lived in a community where there's a lot of wild kids, and I was part of them, and we drank. We drank before school, during school, after school. By my freshman year, I was, I was in a lot of an athlete in soccer and gymnastics, and, I got varsity my freshman year, but, I was drinking and partying, and so, I got caught at school. They had to knock me back down to JV, not let me compete for half the year. I got caught drinking with my parents constantly. It was just crazy. And then we moved again. So when I moved to Florida, the first thing when I moved there, I found my first week there, I found the drinkers and went to a party my first weekend there, an all night party drinking. And it just continued on. I wrecked my car at 16 years old, right after I got my license. I was driving home to hide, I went to hide my cigarettes and all that drinking, and I took out my neighbor's car mailbox, and a tree stopped me from going into their house. And I ran from the scene, I went back to where I was partying, and they called my parents, and cops were already at my house, but I didn't get a DUI that night. My dad picked me up and gave me breath mints and got home, and they arrested my brother for a DUI that night. So they let me go. They said that my parents had enough problems. And so I got away with it. And so, I didn't learn anything, I don't think. And my parents, thought I would outgrow it. But the partying continued. I thought you get married and happy and live happily ever after and have cocktail parties and golf and all that. And so I was that one that liked to keep partying and drinking and other issues. And then I think, I kept getting in trouble with drinking hard alcohol. So I switched to beer and wine and doing other stuff. And so, I was trying to do stuff where I wouldn't get in trouble. That was my first marriage and had kids, and I was getting a lot of trouble in Florida. And I knew I had a problem with other issues, but, I just didn't think it was alcohol at the time. But I didn't know what to do. I tried to check into a rehab there, and it was like a prison lockdown type where they detox people before they go to prison. So I stayed a couple days, and I went out, and I got out. And I called my parents, and I said, if I don't get out of Florida, that I'm going to die. So I moved to California. It's a great place. And, you know, I thought that would help me. But, you know, the first thing I did was out going to the bars and running and getting in trouble in L.A. I thought that I had it stamped on my head that, you know, find me, I'm the party. Like party. So I kept going. And I did resolve those other issues back in my early 30s. You know, I finally resolved that. But I stuck to my beer and wine and trying to control my drinking. I still was getting into some trouble, but, you know, I was able to maintain it. I thought I was. And then over the last probably 15 years of my drinking, the beer wasn't working anymore in the wine. And so I was starting to have a little bit of vodka on the side so I could get it started so I didn't have to drink so much. And I already knew, you know, to the next morning to get rid of the shakes or anything like that, have a drink because that gets rid of it. And so I knew that early on. And so I was doing that. And so I started drinking more and more, and the vodka started taking over more than the beer. And I didn't realize the change that it was coming where I had to have it. I didn't notice it. I didn't notice that insanity in my life was starting. I had no idea looking back. And, you know, I had controlled moments of time. And then I would go off the handle for a while, and then, I mean, would go crazy. And then, you know, I got sick, and, you know, I ended up in the hospital. This was 10 years ago. It was about 10 years ago. I ended up in the hospital with stomach pains, a snap. They didn't know it was wrong. They didn't know the amount of alcohol I was drinking. And stuff like that, and I had kidney failure, I had pleurisy, they put me in a coma, and, you know, 3 months, I was in the end of January, and I was there till I got on Easter Day. I couldn't walk, you know, I had to learn how to walk before they let me go home. I had to walk all the way around the hospital before they let me go home. And, but also, when I was in that hospital, I didn't even know where I was at. I didn't realize I was still in Visalia, but I remember I wish I could walk down to find a store down there to get cigarettes and more alcohol. So I had to go with the pills they were giving me. And that's insanity. And so I did get home, and then I had a bottle of vodka here, and I just, you know, I couldn't talk because they scratched my throat. It was hard to talk. I couldn't walk. I had no muscles. I was on dialysis, and I had that bottle of vodka here, and I still, as soon as I was left alone, I got that bottle of vodka down. I could barely get it, but I used a broomstick, and it was a plastic bottle, thank God, so I could throw it off and not break it. So, it was insanity, and then, you know, it got worse. Then I was pissed off at the hospital. I blamed them for what they did to me, that it wasn't. It wasn't my fault that I was in there. It was the hospital did it to me. And I was pissed off and angry. And I was angry at, you know, life. And I didn't want to live anymore. And so the drinking got worse. And my body needed it. I had to have it in me or I'd go into convulsions. It was just insanity. You know, I'd go to different liquor stores that I didn't want nobody to think I was an alcoholic, and it was crazy. I hid it in the house, you know, after my family seen me sick. I didn't want to let them know I was drinking as much as I was, and, you know, I knew I needed help, and then about first time I came into AA was 6 years ago, and I finally went to a rehab, and so when I went there, I was pissed that I went went there when I got, I was scared to death, didn't know what to think, and plus they had to detox me, and it was hard, and I hated it, and I was pissed off at everybody in there, and I was pissed, you know, I seen the people in there laughing and having fun, and I was like, don't you know where the hell you're at? And, you know, this is insane. I didn't get it, and then, but what happened in there that first time is, that was the first time I felt good in a long time. You know, I could feel again. You know, just, you know, I, after getting through the detox, you know, it was a good time there, and I remembered that. But I didn't, when I got back from my first rehab, I didn't want to follow the suggestions that were told to me. I wanted to do it my way. I still thought, you know, I deserved to drink. I worked hard, and I was pissed off at everybody that put me in there, even though I said I needed help, but I was mad I went, because now everybody knew, and now I had to hide it more. You know, I started drinking again, and I didn't realize progression. You know, I kept getting it. Kept getting worse, you know. I didn't, so I ended up back in rehab. Like 6 months later, I was back worse than I was the first time, and I really wanted it that time, but I still was stubborn. I tried to do the sober living after I got out, but I didn't still want to do it my way, and I still had that anger and pissed off, so. You know, I didn't want to, I thought meetings could help me. I thought that's just go to the meetings and then come home. And that didn't work. And so I went right back out, of course. Then I, you know, I felt bad. I wanted to get sober, and I went to meetings again. And I got, you know, I got close to a year sober. But I stopped going to meetings. And, you know, and started, I still didn't get rid of my anger I had. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't do anything that I was told to do. It was just my way, and I knew everything. So I started drinking again. I ended up, I was in and out of the hospital constantly. I started kidney failure for the second time a month before I went into rehab the last time, July 7th, when I went in. A month before that, I was in the hospital again, and the start of kidney failure again. But I went in there before, you know, where they catch it, and I was only in there for about a week. So I was lucky again. And I still did it. I still came home and drank after that again. And then, you know, God did for me what I couldn't do for myself, because I went, you know, I was drinking. I was probably in a blackout for that month. I was going to work. I was driving 45 minutes back and forth to work every day. But I was in a blackout at work, and, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I don't remember that day. I remember pieces of it. I ended up falling down a flight of stairs. Bloody. I woke up. I remember parts of it. I remember blood. Because the flights of stairs are metal grates that go three-story. And, you know, an angel, I call him my angel that found me. And got my family picked me up, and then I went to rehab again. And so I don't know, you know, I called my HR that day that I needed help. So I went to rehab, and I got there, and I was like, Jesus Christ, I can't believe I did this again. You know, I wasn't planning on staying sober. I just maybe trying to get out of trouble at work, because this time they know. So I don't know why I listened this time, and I heard something at this rehab. You know, that I had to change my thinking. I had to change the way I think. And, you know, and God, you know, brought me back there, because I wasn't willing to do it. So he did for me what I couldn't do for myself. I remember driving to work And I was like, God, please help me. And I was like, no, I didn't say that because I didn't know how he would show me. And I'm like, okay, I'll do it. So, but he did it for me. So I'm so grateful for that, though, because, you know, I was scared to come back into these meetings because I did have people that were trying to help me when I first came into these rooms here. And I was so embarrassed and just did not want to walk back into these rooms again. And so I went to a union meeting. I'm in the union. So I went to the union meeting to start out with. And then I got brave enough and I'd go to that Wednesday night meeting. And I started seeing people that I used to know. And then it gave me the strength to walk back in. And they welcomed me with open arms. And it gave me the strength to walk back into my home group, that I had before. And they were, happy to see me and was glad that I made it back because it's lucky I did that I had that, this chance to come back. And so I continued to do meetings, and I met my sponsor, a good friend of mine that, not with us anymore. He, was the one that was trying to help me the first time, and before he passed, he introduced me to my sponsor. And so I did the suggestions, and got the sponsor, and we worked the steps. And those steps, working them steps, I thought that was the stupidest thing I ever heard. And, but God, that helped me. You know, when that first step, I knew I was an alcoholic. And in my 30s, I knew I was an alcoholic. But, I didn't hear that to accept that I was powerless over alcohol. I didn't hear that at all those first few times. And then when I accepted that, that was just a big relief that I'm powerless over alcohol. I can't have that first drink because the phenomenon or the all go nuts again. And it's just, that those steps relieved me of so much, and God helped me get rid of my anger I had, and the acceptance of other people, that I can't change anything. That just helped me, my life get a lot easier that way, instead of trying to change everything and change the way other people that are not like me, let them be them and be me, made life a lot easier. And it made my life that I still have my job, believe it or not. And it made my life at work a lot easier. I hated work. I hated the people I worked with. They were all, it was hell, and I made that hell. And now after accepting my life and being present, it's good. I can smile and say good morning to people and be a part of a team. And so it's good. And, yeah, so the steps are amazing. It helped me learn a lot about myself. And, when my sponsor is a big, service junkie. And so she was on me right away. I think one of my first service jobs was at this meeting. And I was in person for the H&I can. So I think that helped me a lot because I was committed to the meeting. I had to show up. But I didn't want to go. I know I had to be there or want to, And so that, I believe that service is a big part of it. So I did chip, I did chip person at a few meetings, a secretary, meetings now. And so it keeps me committed to going to meetings because that's a big part. Plus I help with H&I. I do go in to the homes for H&I. So it's good to be a part of this and give it back. It's amazing what this program can do if you give it a chance. And I didn't. I wanted to be that strong. I didn't need nobody's help. I could do it myself. And you can't. I always have to find out the hard way. But it's, you just got to keep coming back until the miracle happens, because it does happen. And, you know, not too many people could believe that I would stop drinking. And so it's all, I'm grateful to be here long enough. Thank you.
Fantastic, Christy. What a great story of hope. Thank you so much. We are now going to begin the discussion part of our meeting. We would like to hear from as many different people as possible, so please share to your heart's content. I will now turn the meeting back over to Christy to pick on people to share.
Go ahead, Ellie.
Hi, I'm Ellie. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, Christy, it was really good to hear your story, and oh my gosh, like, what you went through in the hospital and everything, that just sounds horrific, and then to hear, like, the powerfulness of this disease that you came back and drank again and again and again, and it's just like, oh my gosh, to hear that you're sober now, it's just nothing short of a miracle, really, and it's such a powerful story because to prove that, you know, we together we do this thing. You know, I think that was like the big part of your message I got of just like, we can't do this alone. And, you know, you just always hear all the cliches, you know, my best thinking got landed me here. It's like, that's, if we're just relying on what comes out of our own head, it's, for me anyway, that's rough territory. And I got to run stuff by my friends in this program and my sponsor continually. That, you know, there really is never a finish line. There's definitely progress. I can see progress. I get reminded to pray, you know. Like yesterday I had a thing with a friend, and it wasn't even a big thing. It was that we were supposed to meet, and then I got there a little late. Because actually I was meeting with a new sponsee, and that just went a little longer than anticipated by about a half hour. And so I told them I'd be up at the lake about 1, and they were gone. And so, man, I was just like, I just had to really work through that, because it really bummed me out that I don't know. Anyway, I made up a story, you know, how like we do. And I really tried to work, like, it's okay, I'm at the lake, I went swimming, and it was still nice, you know, I still made a good day of it. But my expectation was I was going to meet them, we were going to go out on the kayaks, they were going to bring food and all this. And what I had to do was that third step prayer, like, over and over. And each time I did, I felt like that relief, but then little time would go by, and it would creep back into my head, and then I'd start grabbing onto a story of, well, that's just rude. You don't invite somebody and then, like, ditch out on them. And I still don't know, like, because I didn't call them today. But what you said in your story, you said, I just let them be them. And that's what I've kind of worked through today. Like, I haven't called her because I feel like I'm not going to be able to talk without have an attitude. I feel like I'm better, and it, a little more time is going to go by. Because really, my spiritual principles tell me to let them be them. Let them do them. Whatever happens, it shouldn't matter. That, and how they apologize or how they justify, whatever it is. I just learned what I learned about them. And this is a friend of 20 years, you know, like, but I'm afraid to call because I'm afraid that I'm going to just have a tone in my voice of just like, that was rude. Yeah. I'm just trying to work through it myself with the help of God, really. So I've just found myself praying again and again, that third step prayer. And it was just, it's just coming to meetings and just like that one little line that you said was so important to me, because, you know, you hear that other saying, right? Live and let live. You got to let people do whatever. For some reason, they got called home, and they weren't there. And you're in a place where there's no cell phone coverage. I'm sure, you know, like, they would have called me. But And then I feel like the typical alcoholic, like I'm making it way too big of a deal about it, really, you know? And really, I was like, just get on with your day. It's fine. I spend most weekends alone anyway. I just go do my thing and go hike. And so I just did that anyway. So that's where I'm ridiculous, I think. Where I overthink stuff way too much. And my best thing sometimes is just to zip it, you know? I'm better to just work through some stuff, not cause more conflict with people unnecessarily, and try to live it in empathy and understanding and just trust that, you know, that I was right where I needed to be for the day, and so were they, and whatever, you know, because when things just happen the way they happen, then I have nothing to fall back on but, well, that was God's plan for the day, you know, because that's how it happened. You know, that the fact is, that is how things go down. But, you know, I guess what this program's taught me is to find lessons in whatever it is that's going on. And it's usually in the uncomfortable things. You know, I don't welcome these uncomfortable things. But that's life, and things do happen. Disappointments happen. But, man, like, these are my opportunities to, like, do a different, pay attention, growth, write about it, pray about it. I've got so many tools that I've learned around here that I don't have to wallow in stuff. You know, I only wallow in as long as I choose to be miserable. And now it feels like, now the older I keep getting, I'm like, life's too short to be miserable. I don't want to hold a resentment. I don't want to hold anything longer than I have to. It's just not necessary. So those are the things I've learned. I appreciated your story, Christy, and you are just a walking miracle. And one of these days, we'll all meet in person, and I'll get to meet you in real life. So,
yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Mike Kelly?
You know, Mike is actually in a place where he can't speak, but he's listening. Sorry about that.
Is there any from New Hope that wants to share?
Sometimes it takes them a moment to get unmuted and turn the camera on. There we go.
Yes. Hi, my name is Marina. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Hi. I have been going through a lot lately. Recently I relapsed. I was out there for 2 months, and I would have celebrated 6 years on July 4th. So my first sober birthday came up, and I just been irritated because I couldn't forgive myself for just recently relapsing. And it took somebody to tell me that I didn't lose my recovery, but I just lost my clean date. And I had like an aha moment, and I started to learn. My sponsor told me that I have to learn now to forgive myself. And that's what I heard in your story, was the forgiveness that you had within yourself to just continue to forgive yourself for every relapse that you had. And I admire your story, and just, I admire these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because of the willingness and the openness and the just the vulnerability that we have to have within ourselves to open up and speak about our stories. It's a beautiful thing. And I'm getting all caught up in my words. My name is Marina, and I'm an alcoholic. I'll stay. I keep coming back.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Anybody else at New Hope?
No, everybody say no.
We have plenty of time. How about Janelle? Jamie? Yeah, Jamie?
Yes, hi, Jamie Alcoholic. Great story, man. Are you my twin? My sister from another mister? Oh, man, you know, so many things I can identify with your story. Pretty much a lot. But they let me go on my job. Well, I can't really say it the first time. The second time they did. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that was the insanity, right? The thing with, you know, I had another issue before I had picked up the bottle again. I remember coming through through emergency, through the ER, and coming through and stuff, and you know, I never, thank goodness, by the grace of God, I've never had the kidney failure, but I know that a couple of times when I knew I was killing myself. I knew it. My mother used to be on dialysis, and I remember the smell of the urine, and I remember how, you know, when I cared for her, and I remember she always used to tell me, you know, don't take for granted the things, which is like just using the restroom, like a normal using the restroom, you know. And I remember that smell, that strong smell. But on a couple of times when I knew I was getting bad in my disease, that would scare the shit out of me, is I would smell a strong urine. And I want to say, honestly, that was probably my mother or God. Well, God, you know, just telling me, hey, you better snap out of it real quick, because I would get scared. Once I would smell, like, I want to say I would smell death. It would clear me up for a little bit. And then I would go, you know, get myself healthy enough to go to do it all over again, and just man, this disease is just crazy. And even there was a couple times when they'd be like, why don't you stop? And I'm like, well, did they have to pump my heart? And I don't even know where that came from, you know? Like, did they have these paddles? Because then it didn't. Yeah. Just really, like, the stupidness. Just the stuff I would tell myself, and at the same time not understanding why I was doing these things, and still, you know, I don't have a problem. It's you guys. It used to confuse me. It used to really confuse me. And, you know, I have 5 children, and I have all these babies, and I'm able to have that many, and here I am not knowing why I can't put the bottle down. You know, I had a job, and, you know, my health was, I ran a lot, did the gym thing, did everything that that book says, you know, try to do this, try to do that, and da-da-da-da, and take a little break. And, you know, I could, when I would, for my pregnancies, those were about the longest times that I didn't do anything. Thank goodness, you know, I gave my babies at least the 9 months that they needed. But then afterwards was a different story, but I gotta thank God that I had that willpower back then to do that. But I celebrate 2 years in June, and it was, you know, crazy to admit that this is the first time I've had 2 years straight of sobriety since 6th, 7th grade. And I go, yeah, I would be able to do the pregnancy stuff, but then once babies were born, it was on, you know? But where I'm at today is, I mean, you just told my story too, and I'm so thankful today that I don't have to hold that shame that caused me to drink. There is a solution in these rooms and in that book, in those steps. I can walk with my head held high. Today I can remember what, you know, what I did the next day. Today I can get in the car and blow in this damn breathalyzer because, you know, you play, you pay. But today I get to do that. I can go to my car anytime and start that thing and not have to worry about, oh, am I going to blow a thing? And, you know, my kids need to go somewhere or do something. You know what? I don't have to worry about how ripped I am before I go or do I look straight? Do I smell, anything like that, right? Today, you know, I can get pissed off, but then I can also, like you said, I can choose how long I'm going to be that way, and I can start my day all over again. Yeah, it's light. It's a lightness. I'm not sitting there worried, you know, I'm broke. I have a lot of other things going on, but at the same time, I have peace. I am not worried about covering up lie after lie after another lie. I get to listen to my nice 13-year-old and a 10-year-old go at it all the time. I get to do that and be a part of their lives. And, you know, this is the program. This is my higher power, you know, finding that God and that connection, relying on Him each and every day. It's beautiful. So thank you for your story. And, you know, a lot of the other people, you know, a new hope and everything. There is hope, you know. Everything's not perfect. My two older sons don't speak to me. One has a birthday coming up on the 17th and just graduated high school, and I haven't seen him in a year and a half. And the last time I seen him was in May, and he didn't even want to look at me. So, but I don't drink over it today. And I know I love him, and it's going to take time, and with that, I'm going to definitely keep coming back and keeping everybody in prayers. Thank you. Thanks.
Hey, Bill.
Thanks, Christy. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Bill Hatzman, and I think I'm definitely in the right place tonight. You know, I've been blessed. Today is actually an anniversary for me. It's 3 months and 16 years since my last drink. And when I got here, my friend Ellie was here. I remember she'd been here a little while. She'd kept the lights on, you know, in AA long enough for me to show up, and I really appreciate that. And I heard Marina talk about feeling like she was kind of talking without saying anything. That's my own way of saying what I thought she said. And you know what I want to tell you is there's a good chance, Marina, that you might be wrong about that, because I heard you talking about you know, some real stuff, and I've had my experience with relapse as well, and I choose to believe that, you know, as long as, I'll just keep it personal, as long as I keep trying to recover, I don't lose anything, that I've learned along the way. It does get uncomfortable, and it does get painful to be new again, but there is an alternative to that that's far worse, right? And that's to not be new again. That's an alternative I really don't want to face. So I'm so glad that you have the courage to come back. That's something I also heard Christy talk about, but I was just relating to you, Christy, on so many different levels. you know, if I wanted to, I could find ways that our stories were different. There, clearly, we've had differences in our experience, but there were a lot of things that you talked about that were that really resonated with me. You talked about yourself as being curious, and that's how I first rationalized my use of alcohol and other substances was, you know, I was just doing research. I was just curious, you know, like what it would be like. And that is the truth. That is a thought pattern that I had that led me down a lot of dark hallways, right? And you talked about yourself, you talked about being an athlete, and I too was an athlete. I was a lot better athlete in my mind than I was, I think, in anyone else's, but the point of that is that, you know, in the earliest days of experimentation, I could rationalize that a person couldn't possibly have a problem if they were excelling in some of the areas of their life. And as a student, I was the proud. I was actually selected to participate in the Tulare County Academic Decathlon. Now, what I am a little remiss to tell you is that I was representing the 2.0 grade point average group. I was proudly representing the smartest of the dummies, right? And that is so much my story, right? I mean, I'd always swim in a small pool to look like a big fish, you know. But in doing so, I rationalized that I couldn't possibly have a problem. I mean, things couldn't be, my life couldn't be unmanageable. I couldn't be out of control if things are going seemingly so well. And, you talked about a car accident. I've had a few car accidents, some really nasty car accidents. Some of them, not all of them, were alcohol related. But not all of them. And one accident that I had, I was on a motorcycle, and I was actually attending a meeting that morning, and then I stopped off at my grandmother's house to see if I could, you know, get some of her medications that I liked, you know, better than I thought she liked, and I kind of struck out that day. I didn't get what I wanted. My sob story didn't buy any pity for my grandmother. I think she was tired of hearing my pity story, you know. So I left grandma's house without any of the things I wanted. And so I was riding on my motorcycle back home, and I needed to get some gasoline. And I noticed that they had my favorite beer on sale in quart-sized bottles. And, I mean, look, if that isn't God, come on, a sign from God, right? My favorite beer is on sale in big bottles. I mean, that's just God speaking if I've ever heard it, you know? And so I got four quarts. I got four quarts, and I pulled off. My aunt was in late stages of cancer treatment, and we knew she was going to be dying soon, she'd had a plot in the cemetery, and I thought, you know, I'd go visit the plot before she got there just to put some good vibes down, you know. And I started drinking those quarts of beer, and I woke up later in the afternoon, apparently, drank myself to sleep, and got up that afternoon in the cemetery, got on my motorcycle, and then promptly ran myself off of the highway. Broke a couple ribs and ended up in a wheelchair, and, you know, talk about being embarrassed going back to meetings, you know, after you've relapsed. I wheeled myself in a wheelchair to a meeting. I mean, you know, hey, look at me. Ha ha. I'm the superstar, right? And the crazy thing is, just like you, Christy, I didn't get a DUI. I don't know how this happens. I mean, you know, the blood tox thing report was there in my medical records. The police report said reported that I had been drinking, but somehow there was this other box that said no for under the influence. I don't know how that happens, right? But just like you, no consequences. I learn no lessons, right? I walk away from that thinking, again, you know, I'm in charge and I've got things working in my life. And you talk about other issues. I've had my experience with plenty of other issues that, you know, I've yet to talk anyone into the idea that methamphetamine is a recreational drug, you know. most people just don't go for that, you know. And I also had those episodes where, you know, I could go and get good and drunk and get in no trouble at all. And I would point at those, they became more and more rare, but I pointed at those experiences as evidence that clearly I did not have a drinking problem. I don't know, somehow it totally escaped my mind. I told a friend one time, I said, you know, look, it's not like I get arrested every time I drink. And he says, yeah, man, but check it out. Every time you're arrested, you've been drinking. And I was like, oh, never thought of it that way, you know? It's like a whole different perspective, right? And so I, too, spent a lot of time blaming other people for my problems. And my particular variation on that is I would find a young lady who just caught my fancy, someone I was attracted to, and I would metamorphosize myself into what it is that I thought she wanted, right? So I was the guy that it called and said sweet things, and I was the guy that sent flowers, and I was the guy that took her to nice restaurants. Frankly, restaurants I couldn't afford, right? And I would behave in ways that I had no intention of sustaining, just to win her affection. And as soon as she rewarded me with her affection, you know, I never saw it at the time, but in retrospect, I could see that the patterns of my drinking meant the worst thing a girl could do is tell me she loved me, because it's like that's the time to put your gas pedal, you know, your foot on the gas pedal for drinking, and my drinking would get worse. And you know what I learned by going through some inventory was that the truth of the matter is that I had this, and I still do to some extent. It doesn't control me the way it used to, but I've got this voice in the back of my head that says, you know what? You're no good, man. You know, there's 1,000 guys that are better than you that she could be with. And you know, once she figures out who you are, she's going to dump you like a hot potato. So don't you dare get your feelings wrapped up around this girl, because she's just going to dump you when she finds out who you really are. And it's that kind of thinking that would, explain some of my behavior. And so I was always blaming her, right? I don't know if you guys ever did this, but whenever someone would begin to question my drinking, it was time to get a new her, right? In your case, maybe it was time to get a new him. I don't know. And that's just kind of the way I rolled. And you said something about hiding bottles. Now, you didn't say this part of it, so I don't know if this is true for your case or not, but I was hiding bottles, and I lived alone. I mean, I'm not really sure who, I'm not really sure who I was hiding the bottles from exactly. I do know that when I would throw the bottles in the trash, I knew that I had a nosy neighbor who knew my parents, and I didn't want him to tell my parents that he saw a lot of empty bottles in the trash. So I would actually keep my garbage, you know, behind the fence, or even sometimes in my garage, until I saw the garbage truck come by, and then pull it out. So that way I ran no risk of the neighbor seeing that I had bottles. So I too would hide my bottles at home. And you talked about when you went to treatment that by accepting that help, it was then apparent to everyone else that you had a problem and the gig was up, right? Is how I kind of thought about it. And I took advantage of an employee assistance program, you know, where my employer sent me away supposedly, you know, anonymously. I was sent off to some mysterious location that nobody would know about. And I mean, come on, you know, everybody knows, right? So mysteriously for a month I was gone, and, you know, you come back, and I went on a business trip, and especially the people that were closest to me, I mean, they were watching me like a hawk, right? And so I knew that the gig was up, and I wasn't going to be able to get away with drinking. And you know, as soon as I got home and I didn't have anybody watching me, I was back on the sauce again, you know, just as quick as I could. And I ended up back at rehab again, just like you said, worse than before. And I remember at one point I'd gone through like this intensive outpatient program. It was like a 30-day or maybe it was a 60-day thing. And then after that intensive outpatient thing, then you would graduate into what they called aftercare, right? And so I graduated into aftercare, and somehow in my mind, I rationalized that since I had graduated the intensive outpatient program, that it was okay to smoke a little pot, you know? And so I went to the first aftercare session, just pie-eyed, man. I was stoned out of my gourd, you know? And nobody was fooled. Nobody was fooled. The counselor confronted me, and she says, man, you can't be coming in here like this. I don't know. A couple of days later, I came back. I called and made an appointment with her, and I went into her office all crying, saying, oh, you got to let me back in. I got to find a way to be sober. And she said, you know what? You got to have 30 days sober before you can come back to the outpatient thing. You know, it took me like 9 months to get 30 days sober. And I finally got 30 days sober, and they let me back in. And I'm really glad that I stuck with that. I remember it was, just like, I heard you say, I tried to just go into meetings routine, right? I mean, just go to meetings, kind of hear what people have to say. I mean, my case is different. I'm not as bad as everybody else. I don't need to do all the things that these people who are obviously much, much worse than I am, need to do. And you know what happened is again and again and again and again and again. And again and again, I showed up and got another white chip, you know. I showed up and got a newcomer chip because going to meetings for me just doesn't work. It just doesn't work for me. And you know, in the 3 months and 16 years that I've been here, I will tell you that it seems to me, I don't know the truth about this, okay? I really don't. There's one of two things happening in AA. One is that there apparently might be people that aren't as sick as I am with alcoholism, and they can come to meetings, and that's all they have to do to stay sober. That's one possible explanation. The other possible explanation is there are a lot of people in AA who don't have the condition that I have. And I don't know which one of those is true, and I don't really care. I know that A has given me a soft place to land. It's given me a better place to live. It's given me the restoration of relationships that I soiled. AA has welcomed me when I was incapable of proper behavior. And you know, I'm guilty of coming to AA and actually staying here for a minute. And I got involved with this sort of, you know, almost not a cult, but sort of cultish sort of AA, you know, this maybe real right wing conservative, you know, badass book thumping AA stuff. I got into that for a minute, you know, and I remember coming to meetings and you know, people that were continuously relapsing, I was telling them, you know, you got to read the book, you got to do the steps, you got to get a sponsor, you got to, and if you're not doing those things, God help your soul, you know. And I don't think I helped anybody with that attitude. I know nobody that came at me with that attitude was ever helpful to me. Now I have heard people say that they've run into sponsors and other people that treated them in sort of an aggressive way like that, and it helped them. And if that's the case, God bless them. That's great. That's awesome. It's just not my shtick. You know, it's not who I am. I found somebody who was compassionate and also not afraid to tell me the truth. And that's the kind of behavior that I try to emulate. I don't always do the best job of that, but it's what I try to do. And one of the things that I think is consistent with that is just to say, any chance I get is to say this. And you said it so well, Christy. But the magic for me has been in taking the steps. And the new perspective that I get on life, I get on my life. I get on the lives of the people around me, and I get, probably most importantly, on this power that I can't possibly understand completely. But it's helped me to come to a number of understandings, right? So I believe that there is a creator of everything, including me. I believe that creator has put in me a unique mix of strengths and weaknesses, and I believe that my life has purpose. I believe that I am here to do something. I hope more than one thing, but I do believe I have a purpose. And you know, it's kind of amazing. I've always been the kind of guy that's a little bit anxious at work. You know, I've always been the kind of guy that's like, you know, concerned that my boss is too nosy. He's you know, bugging me about too many things that really aren't really, come on, you know, this can't be that important. Or on the other hand, I've got people underneath me or to the side of me that are just too demanding. And you know, the crazy thing is in our book, it talks about this state of mind where we get a new employer. And how I understand that is to say that yes, I have people in positions of authority in my life here on earth. I've got, you know, judges, for example, and law enforcement officers and bosses and spouses and parents. And I've got all kinds of different people in positions of authority in my life. All of those people seem to be easier to get along with when I focus on doing what I think God would have me do. And one of the reasons, so I told you that going to meetings didn't keep me sober, but one of the things that does happen in meetings is that's where I get to find people that are new and also people who have more experience than me. This is a place, and Janine does this so beautifully. I got to tell you, I just absolutely love my friend Janine. I've known Janine now for a little more than a year and a half. I've known her for the entirety of COVID. we met on a noon meeting, and I get to meet with Janine almost 5 days a week most of the time. And you know what Janine does? Janine shows up, and she tells me the truth about what's going on with her. And she's not afraid to say things that, you know, a lot of us would kind of be afraid to admit. And what it does when she does that for me is it makes it feel safe for me to do the same thing. On that note, because we have time, I want to tell you another story. I had an opportunity, my wife and I, last weekend, we had an opportunity to go down to Southern California where her two sons live, and one of her son's birthday is on the 4th of July. And so on the 4th of July, we went down south to surprise her son for his birthday to have dinner with him. And on the drive down there, I got a phone call from a guy that I met because I go to meetings. I met this guy several years ago. And I ran into him several times at these meetings. I had a number of conversations with him. I mean, nothing really to write home about, right? But I knew the guy. And he called me on the drive down there. And I answered the phone, and he said, hey, man, I'm in a bad space. I could really use some help. Sure, man. What you got? What's going on? And he told me that, his girlfriend had recently died. And not only did his girlfriend die, but she was actually pregnant with his son. And I guess something about the way you guys have taught me to behave, he felt like it was okay to tell me about some of the things that he was thinking about what he ought to do next. I got to tell you, I'm not equipped for that. I'm not smart enough. I don't have enough training. I feel really inadequate at a time like that. And there were several times in that conversation where I was just silent. Because I had no idea what to say, and I knew this was a moment of gravity. This was a time when I had to be on. I gotta get this right. I can't say the wrong thing. And I don't know what to say. The conversation went on for, there's a lot of moments of silence, but the conversation probably went on maybe 5 to 10 minutes. It wasn't a terribly long conversation. It felt like it took for an hour, right? But we did talk about a couple of things, and then the conversation was over, and then by then we were meeting with family, and so afterwards, my wife and I had a chance to talk about what had happened. And I hadn't really thought about it, but one of the things in retrospect, as I'm looking back on the conversation earlier that day, I think to myself, why didn't I ask God? Why didn't I ask God to give me the words to say? And I started to feel like a fake, maybe? I don't know. I felt like, God, you know, I talk a big God game, you know, and then here it is. Here's my moment. And I just forget. And nevertheless, in the conversation, there were three things that he and I talked about. And one of them was I encouraged him to get a sponsor. Because he's been out of state now for almost a year. And because of COVID stuff, right, meetings aren't really happening a lot. And so he hadn't met anybody where he's living now. And so I encouraged him to do that. I asked him to make a commitment to do that. And I also asked him to make a commitment to tell the truth to the mental health professionals that he had access to, because he wasn't doing that. And I told him, I said, you know, man, you're worried about admitting to someone about the thoughts that you're having. And I'm just going to tell you, under the circumstances, if you didn't have those thoughts, I would be worried about you. And then I made an arrangement to meet with him when he was here in town, which was just a few days ago. And it seemed to me like, I failed to ask God for help, and he showed up anyway. And he guided me, and he told me what to say, and he told me what to do. I mean, that's the only explanation I can come up with, because I'm not smart enough to come up with those three things. Even those three. That's just not me. And today I was talking with a friend of mine who I know through another fellowship. A religious fellowship, if you will. And I admitted to him that then I felt bad about the fact that I didn't ask God for help. And then he started to tell me about some of his prayer routines. And as he did, I remembered something that I forgot. And, almost every single day, and I say almost because I'm not perfect. There are days when I forget, But I would say on average at least 5 days a week, and sometimes 7 days a week. In the morning when I get up, one of the things that I ask God to do is to show me what he'd have me do today and to use me to do whatever it is that he wants done. And it didn't occur to me until my friend started talking about his prayer routine that I did ask God for help. I just didn't do it while my friend was on the call, you know? And so I share that with you because I think it's important to have a routine where I reach out and ask for help. I have a routine with my sponsor. I see him once a week. I have a routine with God. I talk to him every day. And I have a routine with you, the fellowship of AA. I see you at least once a day and many times, several times a day. I'm really, really fortunate that my life allows me to do that. I know not everybody's schedule affords them that opportunity, but that's how blessed and how lucky I am today. And, I just couldn't help but think about how much of what Christy said lines up with my own experience tonight. So thanks for letting me share. I went on a long time, but I think I'm the last one here, unless somebody else at New Hope wants to jump in. I know we tried that once, but...
Is your wife on here?
No, I have two devices so I can share the readings. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm not seeing any sign of life there, so we are close to the time. I want to make some closing announcements. The Valley Group encourages sponsors.